All right, so I'll go ahead and call us to order. And for those of you who are guests or who are newly elected and are sitting in the back, if you could take a moment, maybe during one of the breaks, and just sign in on the sign-in sheet back there, if you haven't already, that would be helpful. So we can go ahead and do our roll call.
Say Gallant. Nate Bauer.
Present.
Chad Olson. I don't see Chad on the line. Carrie Santoro.
Present.
Brianna Pauling.
Present.
Thanks. Leslie Walls.
Present.
Alden Norris.
Present.
Jamie Warwick. Jesse Atencio. Sue Mitchell.
Here.
Wendy Roop, she's going to be late. Chris Brooks.
Here.
Thanks, Chris. China Sandgren for Jane.
Here.
Matthew Mund.
Here.
Kathy Nava.
Here.
Susie Fry.
Here.
Stacey Abishow.
She said she's going to be late here.
Brandy Marrero. Katie Miller. I think I have Katie online. Jessica Armstrong.
Here.
Emily Nelson.
Present.
Kara Axe.
Here.
Dina Jala.
Here.
Jessica Allard.
Present.
Kimberly Knudsen.
Here.
Brad Crick.
Here.
Lena Krudikoff.
Present.
Janelle Merrifield. Amanda Wall.
Here.
Melissa Campbell.
Here.
Trish Winters. I think Trish is not going to be here. Connie Huizenga. Samara Tabor.
Here.
Anybody whose name I didn't call? That was not.
Okay, if we could have a motion to approve the agenda, please.
So moved.
Okay.
A second.
Thank you, Brad. Any additions or edits to today's agenda? Okay, hearing none, we have an agenda for today. Approval of consent agenda, that one's been off.
Yeah, we have a consent agenda today. Does anybody have a motion to approve our consent agenda?
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Thanks, Brad.
Second.
Thanks, Sue. Consent agenda is approved.
Thanks, guys. Green dot in it. Does anyone have any green dot issues or things to share on that item? Okay. We have no pending actions for status updates, so we'll move past that. And do we have anyone here for public comment today? All right. Hearing none, officers' reports. I'd like to welcome those of you who are newly elected representatives starting in January who've come to sit in and observe today. If you could just kind of raise your hand, let's welcome them to staff council. Thank you guys for both your willingness to serve and represent your units and also for taking the initiative to come in and get a sense of things. I think it's there's a lot of this sort of formal protocol that we use that at first glance seems sometimes a little intimidating, but very quickly is just sort of the way of doing things and becomes easy. So I think it helps to see it once before you're thrown in. A reminder that there's going to be some holiday closures, especially in processing offices like human resources. So there should be a reminder going out this week with some dates about getting your paperwork in early if you need it processed either before the holiday or before the new year. A lot of times these offices work through the hard closures to get things processed or people onboarded and hired, but with lower staffing levels this year, that is extra difficult. So just watch your inboxes for an announcement on dates if you work in an area where you need someone else to process, particularly to process paperwork for you. Just a heads up there. I think most of the meat of the updates will be for Nate, so then I think I'll just go ahead now, and I think as you guys all know, this will be my last meeting because I'm having a baby in January, so I will officially, right now, resign effective at the end of today's meeting. I want to thank you all for making this a really, really meaningful and productive experience, and thank you all for your willingness to serve the university. I think the work we do here is really important in representing our staff and building that connection to the administration, making sure those voices get heard. So thank you all very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Barry. So I guess I'd just like to start by calling attention to the resolution we passed as a part of the consent agenda, recognizing and appreciating Faye and her service. She's been a terrific officer, leader, and friend. And I think that she's reflected really well upon staff counsel to our leadership, university leadership, and administration. She's really done an excellent job, and she's worked harder and provided a better example, I think, than we any of us could have expected. So thanks, Faye. Thanks very much. And I would also note that the resolution as part of the packet today was a very collaborative effort, and the language in there is heartfelt and widespread.
Thank you.
I would also like to note a couple of things. We have been notified that a new full search for a permanent chancellor will convene in January. That's news just over the last week. The president announced it as part of the communications summit in Anchorage last week that I was a part of. They are, I believe, attempting to convene similar or the same committee members as they had last year, as that resulted in the canceled search. They have reached out to me, and I've agreed to participate in the hiring committee. More news on that, I think, will definitely be coming. They have notified us that they're not going to seek an outside consultant this time like they did last year, so that's one notable change. And it's unclear at this point exactly how recruitment or application of candidates will be handled, but we're awaiting news about that. Also, as a part of that same summit, there was a bunch of communication about strategic pathways and long-term strategies and communication on part of the university. It's very clear that decisions are still being made about the third phase of pathways. Obviously, second also, those committees are still presenting and considering their options, but in regards to the third phase, exactly what areas are going to be reviewed and to what extent they're going to be reviewed, it seems like that's still in the discussion phase, I think, with university leadership. So we're also awaiting updates on that. It's also clear that in regard to specific communications and objectives as part of the pathways process in general, long-term transitions for UA, that the goal that many of you have heard mentioned in the president's communications regarding 65% of Alaskans with some level of post-secondary degree by the year 2025. They seem to have seized on that as the singular and particular public objective. So there was a bunch of language about that as part of these meetings, and I think that we can expect to hear a lot about that going forward. Many of the objectives, whether they're curricular, financial, administrative, many of those tactics, I think, will be framed in terms of how they contribute to this 65 by 25 goal. So it's good to keep that in mind. I know that as staff people, a lot of us are involved in communications, recruitment, retention of students. So it seems like messaging around a lot of those, that this is going to be a theme. So it's good to know that. Budget update, I think we're awaiting the governor's budget request, also expected in January. That's sort of the next stage in terms of budgeting for the state. Will give us a benchmark, but of course, legislatively, it's always an open question until the legislature convenes. So,
So I think you should have all seen the request that the Board of Regents approved in November, which is actually an increase over last year's budget, specifically looking to dedicate some resources to improving recruitment and enrollment, specifically trying to get our number of students up with the understanding that if we have a higher number of students, we have kind of better ratios, effectively, in terms of cost per student and utilization and so forth. So that number was actually slightly higher than we ended up getting last year. The guidance from the governor has been to expect a 5 to 10% cut next year. So we'll see basically where the governor goes based on the region's budget, and then the legislature will be looking at the governor's budget, not at the budget that we submitted. But it's possible for the legislature to then go in and add things back to the governor's budget. It's happened before.
Thanks. Yeah. In addition to the chancellor's search upcoming, there are also two other sort of high-profile positions that we anticipate staff involvement on the search and hiring committees, chief diversity officer, and also the vice chancellor for university and student advancement in lieu of Mike Sprague's retirement resignation. I think that's all I've got.
And then, Leslie, to answer your question, that question came up at Cabinet as well. I was interested, and what we heard was that it sounds like the president is not interested in reaching out to any of the prior candidates, that he wants to start from scratch, essentially. Certainly not reaching out to any of the prior finalists. I do know that he's hoping to see a greater number of Alaskans in the finalist pool this year, which will really depend on the number of Alaskans who apply, which was our problem last year. So it'll be interesting for sure, but I think the current word is not to expect any of the prior finalists to be involved this round. All right. Thank you, Nate. We're a little ahead of schedule, but I know I saw Chris here for the Faculty Senate report. Chris, if you're ready.
So, good morning. As with staff council, there's ongoing discussions in Faculty Senate and concern regarding the strategic pathways process, and you know, sort of a mixture of opinions on it. Some see it as a seat at the table for governance, which we appreciate to at least be part of the process, and others, and we see it as kind of a useful tool for evaluating the university system and developing options for reorganization. Others see it perhaps as a bypass of the governance process entirely, where input from the teams is disregarded by the president and the summit team, or just provides cover for some ulterior plan, I guess. But, you know, the president and the summit team, they're the ones that are paid to make the tough decisions on balancing the budget, et cetera. Regardless, for phase three, we haven't had, we continue to not receive too many details on the results of phase one and phase two, although we've heard some of that in regards to the consolidation of the College of Education. As far as phase three goes, we have heard that there will be increased faculty representation on some of the teams evaluating the options, at least on the academic side. And so phase three will include the academic topics of the social sciences, arts and humanities, natural sciences, and then as far as administrative, they'll be looking at finance, risk management, land management, and facilities. You might have heard something of this new vision for the University of Alaska by Avil Belsa-Ito. He will be speaking to the UAA Faculty Senate soon. He'll actually be double billed with President Johnson, so that'll be an interesting meeting, I'm sure. And he'll be speaking at the UAF Faculty Senate in February. He can't speak this afternoon because he's on travel. Faculty Alliance, which is, again, sort of the governance body for faculty across the university system, is that we're still able to provide some input into the strategic pathways process. And we've been able to get some data that it's turning into a duel of spreadsheets. You know, on the one hand, there's some advocates that say, you know, statewide should be cut to the bone. It's way too expensive, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have other spreadsheets that say, well, it's actually been cut quite a bit and isn't quite as expensive as can be claimed. And that's just a function of, it's really easy to make apples and oranges types of comparisons when looking at spreadsheet data. And really, a university is a very complicated system, and it's very difficult to do really quick cost-benefit analysis like that. But it's useful, I think, to entertain all ideas for getting through these difficult budget times. Faculty Alliance, we're also working on some issues with the Common Calendar that have developed specifically that we're not starting on Thursday. So one of the things we passed in Senate is just a minor revision to the attendance policy so students have more time to add and drop classes that were previously predicated on a Thursday start date. In January, some faculty in the Alliance were hoping to, as part of a retreat in Anchorage, to have an informal dinner with some of the Board of Regents that coincides with their meeting to enhance communication between the board and faculty. And then today, in the Senate meeting today, we're discussing a motion to amend the program review process. And so, you know, there's a regular program review, and then as you know, bad budget news comes down, which may or may not occur when the governor's budget comes out in December. That can trigger, it can be one of the things that triggers special program reviews. And usually, Faculty Senate is involved in that process at the very, very end, at which point we just say no, and it doesn't really matter. But at least now, if we can pass this motion, then at least Senate will be involved throughout the process without slowing it down or making it more inefficient. We also have some ongoing discussion on the general education requirement
alignment requested or demanded by the Board of Regents, and I won't bore you with that policy, but that's pretty much all I have on the agenda for today. Also, the Uzzabelli Awards for Teaching, Research, and Service, those typically used to be in a separate ceremony, but this year they will occur at 3:30 right here today after the Senate meeting, so if you have the time or ability, I'd encourage you to attend that, to recognize some of the star faculty we have here at this university. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions for Chris for Faculty Summit? Thank you.
Thank you.
And I don't see Colby or anyone from ASUAF, I don't think, here, so we'll just move along. Unfinished business. First up is ratifying the election results from the fall 2016 election. So that's attachment 277-2 is the election results. That's on page 6 of the agenda. And the motion is attached, which is the page before that. Yes. Page 5, attachment 277-1. And then we have the motion attached, so we don't need a motion. Right. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, let's do this, and then we'll give them a minute to get settled. Okay. All right, so if I could have a motion first, since this didn't come through committee.
I move to...
Oh, yes, but we have to have the motion first, so thanks. Brad?
Yeah, I move to ratify the 2016 Fall Staff Council election.
Great.
You need a second.
Thanks, Sue, for the second. And then I heard an edit from Brandy, which is the last digit of the rationale should be 2017 instead of 2016 for when they begin their two-year terms. Any objection to that edit? All right. So we have an amended motion, and then we need a two-thirds vote for this. So I'll ask you to go ahead, for those of you voting members in the room, raise your hand, all those in favor. For those of you online, please type aye or yes in favor. And if you could just, okay, you got everyone in the room. Okay, you can put your hands down in the room. Thanks. That seems like we got two-thirds. Okay. All right, the motion passes. Thank you. And with that, we now have our staff council. Oh, no, sorry, let's do Colby's report first. Sorry.
I see a microphone right here, so I'll just step up. I apologize for not being early enough to catch the... Seems like you guys are moving along at a good pace, so I apologize for not being early. I would just like to share just a few things. I'll be brief. First, our elections were finalized this Sunday, and we will be forwarding one candidate for student regent and one candidate for student commissioner onto the Board of Regents office and then onto boards and commissions at the governor's office. So those students will be before the governor late this next semester for appointment. So hope our fingers are crossed there. Of course, I'm sure any student that gets to that level will do great, but of course there's a little bit of UAF pride there, so our hopes are high there. Secondly, as you probably know, we lost one of our fellow NAMICs this past week. A suicide is an issue that touches a lot of Alaskans very deeply, and especially younger Alaskans in high school and in college. There's no denying that this is a very challenging time a very challenging phase of life for a lot of people. So I do have one request, that you do what you can to be there for those students and for those colleagues that you are in contact with. Pay attention and know that you really only see the tip of the iceberg, that there's so much more going on. And to really not be afraid to ask tough questions. This is a very stigmatized issue, and sometimes people can be afraid to ask if someone's thinking about hurting themselves, to talk about that. But it is that talking about it that helps and that people need. So I encourage you and request that you help support my peers and even your colleagues by keeping the issue in the forefront and not letting it be stigmatized or in the shadows. So with that, I'll leave you. But I thank you for your time, and please be willing to ask those tough questions.
Thank you, Colby. Thank you for that really important reminder. And then I think just a reminder to staff, if you don't know about the resources that are available or ways to support students, reach out, because there are resources out there that you could be connected to if you're wondering how best to be a support or a resource for students or for your peers. And it is a real tough time of year for a lot of people. So thank you, Colby.
Thank you.
Any questions for Colby? All right. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with that, we now have a special election for vice president. So online nominations closed on November 30th. Do we have any further nominations on the floor?
Who's currently nominated?
Currently, we have Samara and Sue Mitchell, who have been nominated and who have agreed to run. So thank you guys both for your willingness. Any additional nominations from the floor? Or from those of you on the Hangout? All right. With that, I will officially close nominations for the Staff Council Special Election for Vice President. And we will have candidate statements. So, Sue, would you like to start?
Can you hear me? Okay. Thanks for the honor of nominating me. I'd be happy to serve, but I would like to say that Samara would also be a very good candidate. So, one of the reasons I've enjoyed being on staff council so much is meeting people from all over campus and the university. I was practically born here. My father was a faculty member, and I was born here in Fairbanks. And I've been a staff member here at the university myself for about 16 years in several jobs for several different units. So UAF is literally in my blood, and it hurts when I see it hurting like it is right now with the budget. So I think I hope that I could make a difference to helping staff get through this tough time that we're in. I know firsthand how important staff are to the university's work and how sometimes they can be overlooked and underappreciated. And they have to pull extra weight when others get laid off and things like that. So I'd like to be able to help speak for people, even pound the table sometimes if it's necessary, to help get attention to staff needs and to make sure that their voices are heard. So no matter who's elected, thanks for the honor of thinking of me, and thanks for all that you do for the university.
Thanks, Tamara.
Beautifully put, Sue. Sue and I've chatted about this, and I think we're both equally committed to the role, so either way you go, you're in good hands. I was really excited about the opportunity to serve staff council in this capacity, and thank you for the nomination. I met with Nate briefly to make sure that I could commit to such an important role and responsibility, and I feel confident that I am able to do so. And I just really believe in staff council. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done at UAF. I am an alumna, and I came back after 10 years and became staff and joined staff council, and it's one of my favorite things that I do here. I feel like we really make a difference, and when things are difficult, I find a lot of comfort in coming here and working with all of you to make the university better. So, thank you.
Great. Thank you guys both very much. I think I'll just say briefly, I'm so pleased that regardless of the results of the election, between the vice presidential candidates and Nate, we have an incredibly eloquent leadership team going forward in the next year. I think it's wonderful to have so many great communicators involved in staff council. So with that, we'll move to voting. So for those of you on the Google Hangout, you'll be getting an online ballot to fill out. For those of you in the room, if you get that email or message, don't use that one. Otherwise, your vote will be counted twice, and we'll have voter fraud issues, and it'll be a mess. So for those of you in the room, we'll be doing paper ballots. So we don't want to have to do a recount. So if you're ready, okay. So hang on for those of you online. You'll get the form in a minute, and then the paper ballots are going around the room.
You talked for like 3 minutes. It was really funny.
And we should take a little and then after you vote, feel free to take a, let's say, a 10-minute break after you've turned in your vote.
Chris, for hanging Chad.
And a reminder for those of you who are here as guests today or new members to please sign in on the sign-in sheet in the back. Thank you.
Are there any other votes? Okay, here, everyone.
Yep. For those of you online, please make sure that you go in and vote now.
And I'll make hash marks.
Oh, okay.
Oh, did Nate and
they don't get the vote.
Okay.
Chris, I'm sorry, we don't have stickers in the budget this year. Oh, Nicole overrided. Never mind.
Very close range. Very close, yeah. Either way, even if there was one more vote, it wouldn't sway it. So I think we're good.
That's still pretty tight.
That's a very tight race.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, and there's three.
It's and they all so vote. Just vote. So Nate can't vote on this, right?
I think it's not going to change as well, either.
We need three or five,
right? And if that leaves the one person who hasn't voted online and him, still would not vote. Do you want to know the tally?
Yeah.
I got one from everyone in the room who was looking. All right, so let's reconvene here. And so I'll officially close voting. Voting is closed. And I have a tally from our elections committee. It was a very, very close race. But our new vice president is Tamara Tabor. So thank you both again.
And thank you, Samara. So if we could have a motion to ratify the special officer election. There's a draft as attachment 3, which should be page 7. Can I have a motion?
I'll move. So.
Thank you, Sue.
I'll second.
Thank you, Brad. Any edits or additions?
We have the right year on it, right?
Vice President, this says Nate, so we do need to change Nate too. Is that? Yeah. Okay.
I'm not willing to serve as president.
Vice President, no. Okay, so edit to replace Nate Bauer with Samara Tabor. Any objections to that edit? No. Okay, hearing none. Do we need a 2/3 for this as well? So we also need a 2/3 vote to ratify this. So same as before, those of you in the room, if you could raise your hand and leave it up until you hear otherwise. Those of you online, if you could type aye or yes. Are you good in the room? Okay, in the room, you can put your hands down. Thank you. Okay. And do we have any abstaining? No abstentions. And do we have any opposed? All right. The motion carries. Thank you. All right. So moving on with unfinished business. Any update on the mentoring from the University Advocacy Committee? I know you guys have been working on some other projects recently as well.
We are working on kind of twisting the staff mentoring into some kind of a discussion forum. We were going to focus on that starting in February.
Awesome. Great. So for those of you who are new members, we'll be starting in January. Just a little preview of something this committee will be working on. In the past, staff have expressed interest in some type of mentoring initiative or support through the university, especially for new people starting in departments where they don't have a lot of peers in their same role. And so the advocacy committee is looking at doing sort of a discussion board or forum type model for some of that, and they'll start that work in February. So just a prelude of the type of things the university advocacy committee works on. You'll have to choose a committee to serve on, so there's a heads up there. Any questions on that? All right. So moving on, item C, resolution 2016-277-3, resolution in support of UAF Staff Council's Staff Volunteer Days proposal. And there's attachment 5, the draft resolution and proposal, beginning on page 9 for the proposal, and then 10 for the resolution. So if you guys want to take a moment and read through that really quickly for anyone who hasn't gotten a chance to look at it yet, and then just a bit of context. We passed a resolution last year, more than a year ago now. It was while Brian Rogers was still chancellor. And then with the budget crisis, essentially, it looks like we maybe needed to adapt so as to not send the wrong message to the community about university resources during a budget crisis. So Chancellor Thomas indicated that he was certainly interested in seeing a renewed version of this, and the advocacy committee went ahead and did that and put in some edits. So the key edit from the last version is in paragraph 4 of the proposal that basically says on one of these designated volunteer days, staff would be encouraged and allowed to use annual leave or leave without pay. So that would be supported by their supervisors during that time to volunteer on one of these projects. And then it also allows once the budget situation resolves, the university could donate additional administrative leave time for staff or allow staff to charge to their regular job, basically, at that time, once it's financially possible for the university to make that commitment. So does anyone from the committee want to add anything to that? The increased staff, the chancellor was certainly supportive. I think there will be a few next steps needed. Once we pass this, the work will not be done, but they were supportive of the idea. So. Any other discussion?
So this is a resolution to establish support at the staff council.
Okay. So, yes. So, this resolution establishes support at the staff council to continue. Okay. Go ahead.
How many days for a school year would this be this far?
Chris, could you repeat that?
How many days for a school year would this be?
That's not determined yet. Potentially two or three, depending on, it might be organized by area, for example. So administrative groups that are, really busy at fiscal year end, maybe the middle of the semester is the best time for them. Maybe student services groups during the semester is the worst time for them. That's something that still has to be looked into. But the thought is that there would be a couple days throughout the year so that people could find one that works best for them.
Okay, so they'll actually be paid from their department or their regular payment, and then half of it would be personal, is that right?
No, that was the old version. The new version, it would just be personal. It would be their annual leave or leave without pay. And then for either they do half a day or, if they're department approved, they could do a full day. So the thought is maybe a half day volunteering event. And then once the university is financially able, it could match that time. But that's not on the table right now. Kara, did you have something to add?
We were talking about doing a week-long period in the spring and the fall. And the fall would be the preparation for the holiday season, and the spring could be a preparation for the summer. We were thinking about, food drive for the kids who are off for the summer, something like that. But we'll work out the details once we're sure that the university is behind it.
Thanks. And Matthew had a question.
I just have a quick question about the process. Out of the interest of seeing this be successful, I know that we started moving forward when Chancellor Rogers, and it kind of seemed to, fizzle out and not go anywhere. After we approve this as a body, what is our role in continuing to give it to the Chancellor and say we want to do this, and then it just disappears again?
Yeah, so the difference this time is that there's not a financial commitment from the university, basically.
But is there a department that will actually charge to organize it and things like that? Or?
So the next step would be that there would probably be a subcommittee formed, or this committee would continue. We'd identify a few days. Those few days, dates first, would go to core cabinet or possibly full cabinet to get buy-in there. And then depending on the dates, that would be then when we'd start looking for community partners, because if the dates that are workable would have to be the fundamental criteria, basically, so that operates.
So staff council would continue organizing it?
Yes.
To the end kind of thing? Okay.
Yes, although we would probably be adding people to the committee from outside of staff council. For example, from marketing would probably be pretty essential. Yeah, Leslie?
The annual meeting specific would may be community need specific, like Kara said, it might be for us to drive for the meals for kids out of school, or if we come up, we see something that is a community need, then we could try to organize around that and see what kind of community support.
Yeah, so in pre-staff, the Chancellor and Kari definitely had a preference for nailing down dates first. if the idea is that the university is okay with staff being out en masse, basically, on those days. If there are going to be very large numbers of staff not working their regular jobs, those days need to be sort of cleared in advance so that basically leadership can support the ceasing of business functions for at least half that day or the full day. So they'd prefer to start with the dates. And it could be certainly dates based on times of year where you expect we'll probably need something like a food drive or a winter-related theme, but to nail down the specific dates and then try and find opportunities in that area that best fit those dates. So they're definitely focused on the operational piece there, which is making sure that before saying, yes, great, this is fully university endorsed, that they're not saying, okay, everyone can be gone, and then it turns out that day that everyone is gone is like the first day of classes or the last day of fee payment or, you know, the end of semester or times when everyone's scrambling to get grades in or when everyone's trying to get new hires onboarded and where a day off or a day out would be a real problem. So.
I think the event will not make it a burden to everybody or anything like that. Sometimes it's very hard to get a very large event notice if you don't know that these community events are taking place. But by the time it doesn't have to be, big mass quantities of volunteers, but it could be smaller groups of volunteers.
Yeah, definitely something to figure out with that committee. So the resolution attached did come through a committee, so we don't need a motion or a second. And again, that's the resolution on page 10. So the resolution is on the table. Do we have any edits or additions to the resolution? Any amendments? Okay, seeing and hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, any abstaining? All right, the motion carries. Thank you very much to that group. I know this has been a long, long ongoing issue, and the work is not done on it yet, but I think it is important, and it's something we can all feel really good about. So thank you guys again for your efforts there. Strategic pathways. Nate, do you have any new updates on that? Or we could do a phase 2 timeline update. You haven't mentioned that.
Sure. Stand by.
I could.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So on strategic pathways, I think as many of you know, this fall was the phase 2 groups, the administrative and academic groups in phase 2. They were scheduled to be presenting this month to Summit Team. Unfortunately, the last in-person meeting that was supposed to happen in November, there was a flight cancellation that meant a decent number of people in one of the academic teams couldn't make the meeting. So they needed to meet again in person, which has pushed the timeline back, which means that the presentations from the Phase 2 teams to Summit Team will be happening in January. And that's when they'll present their pros and cons and of the options that they identified and worked through. A reminder that they're not making recommendations, just presenting the pros and cons that they identified in each of their options. And then those will be discussed at Summit Team, and then the President Johnson will probably be presenting his thoughts on the directions from those Phase 2 teams to the board when they meet in March, which is the next Regents meeting other than their retreat. So their next business meeting will be in March. So probably the Phase 2 directions, decisions, there should be some decisions from the Regents at that point, or at least endorsement of President Johnson's directions. And then phase one, some of those outcomes are being worked through already and implemented. As I think Chris mentioned, there's been discussion on the Regents, particularly about the College of Education. At the last Regents meeting, it came up. While they support having a single College of Education for the University of Alaska rather than three, they did not approve the decision to have it housed at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. They had some vigorous debate on that and then held off. So I think they're scheduled to discuss that next week at a special meeting.
Yeah, to the end of this week.
The 14th. Sometime soon, we'll get that date. There should be a special meeting, and just a reminder that you can listen in. Those are public meetings, and you can stream them. If you just Google University of Alaska Board of Regents and go to agendas, from agendas, you can get to the link to stream those meetings. Okay, it is the 14th. So December 14th, the Regents will be discussing, the proposal. I guess still certainly on the table to have it at UAF rather than UAS or UAA, but perhaps some of them needed more time, or perhaps we'll go another direction. It's a little hard to know. And then for phase three?
I can just say, as staff alliance chair, we had prepared a full list of recommended staff governance reps to serve on phase three teams. I think we talked about that at our staff council meeting last month. We submitted those to the president's office. We got a response that that was premature, and they've now posted a notice on the process and timeline page for pathways that says that areas noted for phase three are tentative and still under construction. So I don't believe there's been any formal kind of announcement to that end from the president or from his team, but it's clear that I think probably as a result of some of the shifts and changes to the second phase that it seems as though phase three has gotten pushed a little bit further. I anticipate that still will take place during the spring semester, and I believe that their target is still to have all three all three phases complete by the end of the school year, but again, it seems as though that's less clear than it was perhaps a month ago.
All right. Single accreditation. So as Nate mentioned, we are going to be going ahead with a formal search for a permanent chancellor. However, single accreditation is still not fully off the table. I think perhaps that's part of the president's interest, maybe in an Alaskan candidate as opposed to bringing someone from outside, might be the fact that that's still not fully addressed. Just a reminder that the Regents' decision on single accreditation, when they took it up, was basically to do nothing on it until after Strategic Pathways was done. And then if Strategic Pathways hadn't resulted in enough changes that they were happy with, then they would reconsider the issue, basically. Strategic Pathways didn't get them where they wanted to go. So I think we decided essentially just to leave this on there as unfinished business until there was some formal, concrete decision, yes or no, but I don't expect there will be any further communication on this issue or any real updates on this issue probably for another year. Budget update, Nate mentioned during his during the Vice President comments, and then we added a bit as well. So essentially just pending on the governor's budget. It's technically due in January, but usually the governor does release it in December. So just kind of keep an eye out for that. I'm sure that there'll be plenty of press coverage once it's announced, and then we can see where that puts the university. And that usually is considered our best-case scenario, is what the governor puts forward. It might be a little bit different this year with the new coalition in the House. Normally the House has been more hostile, less friendly, let's say, to the university than the Senate. in terms of funding, but there might be more support there now, basically, with the change in representatives. So that'll be something to watch once the legislative season really kicks off in the spring. And hopefully they'll have a final budget there by the end of May, which is sort of the normal. Although, as we all know, last year it went until right up to the wire till the end of June. So we'll see how quickly they can get through it this year. I think there's still a lot on the table in terms of budget for the legislature to deal with. Furlough and leave accrual. I think maybe this is one we will discuss under new business. So I'll just hold off on that for now. Employee giving initiative, I think, was sort of one idea that had been an alternative to Volunteer Day at the time, that former interim Chancellor Powers had been thinking. Although I will just issue a reminder that there's the United Way employee giving campaign going on currently. And so if you are so inclined, I think there have been multiple messages in the Cornerstone from the chairs of that committee as well. The United Way, with the United Way campaign, you can choose where your donations go to any number of particular organizations in the community, or you can just make a general United Way donation. You could also, if you wanted to, donate to the university through the United Way. But, you know, if that's something that you're considering, I know money's tight for a lot of people this time of year, but it's also the time of year when a lot of people think about giving back. All right. So thanks, everyone. Let's reconvene. And we have staff achievements and highlights.
Yeah, so just once again, I'd like to thank Faye for all the terrific work she's done for staff council and recognize her again. So thanks, Faye.
And we have actually, today we have several outgoing staff representatives who are completing terms on staff council this month. So we just wanted to recognize them as well. Starting with Brad Crick, who's also past president and who has just given so much to staff council and was a real mentor to me when I started as representative and as vice president as well. I don't think we can say enough thank you to Brad for what he's done for staff council. So.
Thank you.
Jamie Warwick is also serving her final month now in her second term. And Jamie has been a real resource to staff council as well. And so it's a big thank you for Jamie, who's online, I think. So, yes. Thank you, Jamie. Trish Winters, who's not here today, actually, she was her last meeting with us was last month. But Trish also just a fantastic resource and part of the team for staff council through two terms. You know, we were real lucky to have her. So let's do a thanks for Trish. Connie Heisinger. Is Connie online? I don't think so. This is also Connie's finishing out her term this year. So a big thank you to Connie for her support and efforts. Matthew Mund, although I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of Matthew, and Matthew, who has very generously agreed to serve as MNR chair, membership and rules chair as well, and who has been a real resource, especially through that group, but a great participant in every meeting, I think. So thank you, Matthew. And Brandy Marrero, who has been the chair of the elections committee and part of the heroic effort this last year to pull off the election this fall, which I really can't say enough. Between Brandy, the elections committee, and Nicole, how much work they did to make that go smoothly, and what a success it was under some very trying circumstances. So thank you, Brandy, for all you've done for staff council. We really appreciate it. And then I won't read all the names, but we do have a pile of representatives who are finishing out their current term and who will be starting a new term in January. So thank you to everyone who made it through a full term and is willing to keep going. And we really appreciate that. I think that continuity is very helpful as well as we bring new people on. And so just thank you all for your willingness to serve. It really does make a difference. So again, we're flying ahead of schedule here, so we'll just come back to the Chancellor's remarks when he's able to attend, and in the meantime, move on to new business. So item A there is resolution proposing changes to furlough leave language in UA regulation R0407110B1 to allow for leave accrual by non-exempt employees. So I know this is something this committee has been working on for a while, and I want to, again, thank Brad for bringing the issue to the attention of staff council. The concern is that the way it sort of naturally works when we do a furlough is that salaried employees continue to accrue leave because their base pay is simply reduced, whereas hourly employees are effectively using leave without pay, which means they don't accrue leave during that time. So it's not exactly fair in terms of the impact to compensation when you consider leave between those two employee types. And so this year, because there was such a small group of us who were furloughed, HR could manually go in and add leave back in for the hourly employees. There's concern, though, that that's certainly not formalized in policy anywhere. In fact, policy says nobody earns leave while on furlough. And so going forward, especially if there's a need to take furloughs in a larger group or with more people in the next year, that might not happen again. And so we would just want to ensure that there's fair treatment of employees regardless of whether they're salaried or hourlied. So I want to thank the Staff Affairs Committee for working on this resolution. It's attached in draft on page
18.
Thank you, page 18. And with that, I'll turn it over to that committee if they have anything else they'd like to.
Yeah, I'm going to defer to Brad on this. He's the one that brought it to Staff Affairs, and he wrote most of this resolution. We had a really great meeting about it 2 weeks ago and talked about it in depth, and we're sort of trying to problem solve it through the issue, and we just decided that this is the best direction to head. We just need to bring it to the attention that we've noticed that this is there needs to be some parity between furloughed and non-furloughed employees. So, Brad, I don't know if you want to speak to it a little more.
Yeah, I think they got most of the pertinent details. What I want to reiterate is that UAHR, UAFHR did make it right for furloughed employees this year, and so that really was appreciated by the, like Faye said, they manually added annual and sick leave hours to non-exempt, furloughed non-exempt employees. But in Jane's conversation with, I believe, with Margo with UAFHR, Jane got the impression that that wasn't something they wanted to say that they were going to commit to, in part because there's, you know, a cost. There's a cost to adding, you know, leave balances back, and in part because of the complexity of doing it for a large number of people. If we end up furloughing, you know, more people than were furloughed this year, and so my hope is that this resolution would go to Staff Alliance since it affects benefits and it affects potentially all staff. And then from there, my hope is that, you know, Staff Alliance will send it along, you know, to the president and to, you know, UA administration for their consideration.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that essentially what we have right now is a temporary fix to what could be a longer-term issue. And we want to be proactive before it becomes a real issue for people, which it could next year. Matthew?
I do have a point of clarification. So just from what you said, that the non-exempt getting leaves when they're furloughed is just like it seems like a system coincidence, but yet we're asking that the UA regulations be changed to literally write this policy in when it doesn't exist for exempt, but we're asking them to write it in for non-exempt.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, so right now, in fact, the policy says no one should get it, but because of the way furlough is applied to exempt employees in Banner,
I'm just suggesting,
sort of
like, should we edit that they say non-exempt and exempt employees? Because
right. So the current policy doesn't specify. The current policy at the university says nobody gets leave.
Right.
And we want to change it so that it's, since there's no way to make exempt employees not get leave, the intent is then to make it so everyone earns leave during a furlough.
So you're saying that doesn't make sense to me. Just because it's, if nobody's supposed to get leave, and it's more like it's just a system. At some point, I'm assuming the president can say nobody gets leave and non-exempt, and they'll have to figure out how to force Banner to do that.
Yeah, so that would be the alternative, is to say nobody gets leave and people who are furloughed take more of a hit than they do currently. I think the point is that it would need to be consistent either way.
Sure.
So either nobody gets leave or everybody gets leave. Since it's easier in the system and better for staff to find a way for everyone to continue to accrue leave, that's the proposed resolution, and that would be consistent with what ended up happening this year.
Okay. And I will say that nightmare possibility of, you know, the administration just saying, well, great, we'll just make it so that no one earns leave while furloughed, I really hope that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't see that as being a good outcome, even though that is fair in some way. But I don't think taking away something from exempt employees is really the way to resolve it. So I hope that doesn't work out that way.
I think, though, yeah, it is worth noting that that is one possible response by the administration. I will say, as a furloughed exempt employee this year, just my personal stance on this would be, it would be better it would be better to be fair than for me to continue earning leave while my peers who are just classified differently don't, when they're taking the same furlough, especially because it means that, you know, if we both get furloughed for 5 days, in fact, I'm 10% better off than Brad without that manual adjustment. So it's, I think that fairness is really important.
I definitely agree, but I just think it's interesting that exempt employees are protected by an FAQ in HR, UA HR policy, but we're asking for non-exempt to be protected by UA regulation.
Right, we're asking for both to be protected by regulation.
Okay.
Yeah. Right now, regulation says the same thing for both. Regulation says no one earns it. And then it's just been this fluke, basically, that exempt have earned it. So what we're truly asking for is that for everyone to be protected by regulation. So, Matthew, is part of the issue the title of the resolution?
Yes, in some ways. Like, as long as that's just the way I read it, it's just saying, well, exempt employees get it because it's in an FAQ, but we want non-exempts to be equal by editing your regulations versus asking it to be added to the FAQ. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I see what you mean. We're saying the difference is in the FAQ, but we're asking for it to be addressed in the regulation.
Right.
Instead of in the FAQ.
Can I ask you a question?
Say.
Sorry. Carrie, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that that's exactly right, that we should maybe ask HR just to clarify the FAQs, but I would think that we would want to change the title of the resolution so that it says to allow for leave accrual by all employees.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there's two separate things maybe that we want to change. I think one, we would want to change the regulation so that all employees earn leave while furloughed to protect that benefit. And then second, we would also want clarification so that the FAQs are consistent, basically, and not saying that we treat people differently.
So that's what I think we ought to do.
I have a question. So, I guess this is a question for Brad and for the committee. In your view, is the FAQ, as it's listed here, inconsistent with furlough policy?
Yes. Uh-huh. So, I mean, the furlough, we should say it's a regulation. In furlough regulation D1, and this is the line in the resolution that we're specifically proposing just removing altogether, accrual of annual and sick leave will be reduced by a furlough. That is in regulation right now. And that applies to non-exempt employees who are furloughed, but it doesn't apply to exempt employees who are furloughed because of how furlough has been implemented. And so the inclusion of the facts in this, the FAQs, is just to have as part of this resolution, like explicitly there, like this is how furlough has been applied. I don't think adjusting the FAQs is the right way to do it because the FAQs are just what HR produced to say this is what we're doing with furlough. So we really would need to change how furlough is being implemented. And I think the most important step is to take that requirement to reduce leave accrual out of regulation.
Yeah. So I think this is just a point. I take Matthew's point and Carrie's point. I guess, in my opinion, strategically, if we were going to approach this by saying, you know, leaving out the contradictions and just saying we think employees should accrue leave while on furlough, personally, I think that might have less chance of succeeding than if we approach it as Brad and the resolution here approaches it, which is to say, there are some employees that are being treated unfairly compared to their peers. Mm-hmm. And rather than sort of approaching it as if we want to accrue leave and that's a conflict with policy, which I think might be interpreted as like, well, no. Like, the regulation says you don't accrue leave. So we're going to make that point and we're going to clarify it by saying that no employees get leave while on furlough. I guess I think it has a better chance of succeeding if we say, well, some employees are being treated unfairly and we want to rectify that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I comment on that real quick?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. However, what I'd like to see is let's build the shit to do. Let's just build everything. You know, if they denied it, I think it was very talking about something to come down.
Well, yeah. So, Chris, I think that if their response to this is to agree with us that we think that all employers should be treated fairly, and the way to accomplish that fairness is to allow all exempt and non-exempt employees to accrue leave while on furlough, then that effectively accomplishes the same thing. And I think that it's an easier path to get there, personally. Carrie.
What you just said is a little different than what you said before. I agree with how you said it the second time, that we need to say that there's an inconsistency between exempt and non-exempt employees, and to rectify it, everyone should get leave. If we leave that last phrase out so that there's the disparity between both and we want to equalize both, then the administration can come back and say, then no one gets leave.
Correct, yeah.
And that would be their remedy. But that's not what we're saying. We're saying that we think everyone should get leave, and I think we should make that very clear.
Yeah. I think that's good, where the actual, as written, the last two points of the resolution are the therefore be it resolved and be it further resolved are, one, removing the actual regulation requirement that leave accrual be reduced by a furlough, and then two, that UA takes steps to adjust the procedures to keep parity in place between exempt and non-exempt. So
I like the way that the resolution is worded. I think the title needs to be amended.
Okay. So what's the okay? So it's on the table because it came through committee, so we can edit. So what's a proposed change then to the title?
I think for the title to say allow for leave accrual by exempt and non-exempt employees. Do you agree, Carrie?
We can either say that or we can say all employees.
Um, Yeah, we could either specify one thing with exempt and non-exempt employees is that it does not, based on how we currently use those words at UA, my understanding is that would not include faculty, who normally wouldn't be included in furlough anyway, because that's not how faculty workloads work, really. They would just potentially have a contract reduction, is my understanding. I don't know. Jessica might, as an HR person, be able to address that more clearly.
I believe you're correct.
So, you know, if we take out non-exempt employees and just end it at leave accrual, we're sort of being holistic. If we say non-exempt and exempt employees, we really are speaking specifically about staff.
Well, then just temporary benefited?
Temporary benefited, or I don't think actually, I think we had changes to temporary employees last year that
they only accrue sick leave.
They only accrue sick leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about changing the last portion of the title so that it matches the last paragraph of the resolution? So you say something along the lines, and it might be too wordy the way I say it, but to allow for or to just to keep parity between exempt and non-exempt employees during furlough.
So to allow for leave accrual and ensure parity.
Yes.
And ensure parity for exempt and
yes.
non-exempt.
So that ties the title into what we're actually resolving to do.
I think that's smart.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. So, what I heard was a motion to amend the title to say resolution proposing changes to furlough leave language in UA regulation RO 407-110-D1 to allow for leave accrual and ensure parity for exempt and non-exempt employees. So all in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
And online? Any opposed to the amendment? Any abstaining? Okay, so now we have an amended motion. Do we have any other amendments, edits, additions? Right. Okay.
I have one. So I move to amend the final line of the resolution to read that UA takes steps to adjust furlough procedures to keep parity between exempt and non-exempt employees during furlough by allowing for annual and sick leave accrual for both employee types? No. But something to allow for leave accrual, so we make it explicit in that final, in our final line. Would it be sufficient just to add to allow for leave accrual during furlough?
But UA takes steps to adjust furlough procedures to keep parity between exempt and non-exempt employees during furlough by allowing for annual and sick leave accrual.
I think that works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, seeing none, the amendment passes. Any further amendments? Yep. Okay. Hearing none, I think we can now vote on the resolution as amended. So as a reminder, the two amendments that have passed are to change the title. So it's now the title ends to allow for leave accrual and ensure parity for exempt and non-exempt employees. And to amend the final sentence so that it now ends during furlough by allowing for annual and sick leave accrual. So all in favor of passing the resolution as amended?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, the resolution passes. Thank you again very much to that committee and to Brad for all your work on this. And as Brad mentioned, the next steps will be to transmit that to Staff Alliance with a CC as well to the UAF administration, just to clue them in, basically. And then it'll go through Alliance. Hopefully, there'll be support from the other system government level staff governance groups. And then ideally, we'll have some sort of resolution from Alliance on that before the next fiscal year starts, since that's when they'd be implementing probably further furloughs if needed. All right. Moving on, the UA Staff Make Student Count Award. Nominations we expect will open this week, which is earlier than in past years, but that earlier timeline basically allows for the recipients to get their award at the Spring Regents meeting, which is a real nice way to do that, and for the recipients to kind of travel to that meeting, meet the Regents, be thanked in person. So a reminder that this is probably one of the most prestigious awards a UA staff person can get. There's one award for each. We're not calling them MAUs anymore, but they're so one from UAF, one from UAS, one from UAA, and one from statewide. And the award, I think, is $1,000 and 2 round-trip Alaska Airlines tickets, as well as, you know, very public commendations. And it is a sort of hefty nomination process, so if you have someone in mind for that, it's good to start getting started as early as possible, because you do need letters of support, including letters of support from students. But that's a really positive one, and I think we did already form at our last meeting, we formed a committee here to choose it, so it will be. Okay, we didn't do one for Cornerstone. Sorry, I misremembered. Okay, so I guess actually we do need a committee here at UAF to select the recipient of that. So that'll be made up of staff council members. Yep, and so the Chancellor's Cornerstone Award, which I'll talk about in a minute, is also open. That is also selected by UAF staff council members. Or that one actually, I guess, staff council forwards 2 or 3 names to the Chancellor for the final decision, but we're heavily involved in the decision-making for both those awards, so it'd be good to have an awards committee, ideally with at least 3 people involved in selecting those recipients. Are you volunteering, Carrie?
I would like to volunteer.
Great. So there's one. Great. Amanda and Kim, excellent. You can be as many as we want. So Melissa and, great, Stacy. Did you get all those?
I have a question.
Okay. Amanda, Kim.
How soon will the committee be meeting?
Melissa.
New members may want to join if there's time.
And Stacy.
That's a good point. I don't, so Brandy raised a point. Some of our new members might.
I expect since the new members' first meeting will be in February, it might be difficult to get coordinated then. But if you're really, really interested, new members, you don't technically have to be actively on staff council to serve on any committees. So if you're really interested in being involved with that, you just send an email to Nicole. And then, Carrie, did you want to chair that committee?
I'd be happy
to convene it. Okay, so you can work with Nicole to get that scheduled. So basically, once nominations close, the award or the nominees will be ready for that committee to review. And then usually in the past, we've had sort of one meeting to decide on the staff and student count award, and then another meeting to decide on the Cornerstone Award recipients. It might be possible to do it both in one meeting, depending on when things actually close, which I don't think that's been announced for staff and student count yet. So
if I may,
something to work out.
But. Yeah, if I may say, there's a lot. I mean, it depends on the year, but there's a lot of reading for it. I would say you'd want at least two meetings, one for each award.
Yeah. And just read them in advance. Yeah, it certainly depends on the year, but yeah. So yeah, the prep for that committee basically would be in advance of that meeting, or two meetings, reading the packets, the nomination packets, and then coming prepared to discuss, and then the committee will do a decision, basically, either on who they're putting forward for staff mate student count award, or who they're sort of who the finalists are for the Cornerstone Award.
And just for clarification, the nomination packets come from Nicole.
For the staff mate student count award, it'll actually end up coming from Morgan Justa. No, they'll go to you first. Okay. So yes, both it'll come through Nicole.
Okay.
Sorry. More things for Nicole to do. Okay, great. So thanks. Both of those are really fun committees to be involved in, basically, because you just get to hear about the wonderful things people are doing. They're real good, feel-good ones. So the second one, just as a reminder, is the Chancellor's Cornerstone Award. The nomination is currently open for that. The link has gone out in the Cornerstone newsletter. Just a reminder to nominate people for that. That's probably our most prestigious staff award here at UAF, and the recipient gets honored at the staff day in May every year, which is formerly Staff Development Day and is now Staff Day. But that's a great way to recognize our peers at UAF, and that one has less of a student-specific focus. The criteria are posted online, but it's a sort of broader swath, I'll say. So thank you to those of you who have agreed to be on those committees. I think you'll enjoy it. It was a fun one to be on. Update on the Carolyn Sampson Memorial Scholarship. So we did forward the change in language on to the foundation. I know they're working through lots of other scholarships as well. And then we did at our last meeting, we did form a selection committee for that. Okay, great. So thank you to that committee, and Nicole is sending that info along. So great. Staff Council Orientation. Nate, did you want to?
Staff Council Orientation will be in February. I personally would be eager to hear feedback from any current reps who have thoughts about what's helpful and what's not. Look forward to having a good and full and effective orientation process for all of our new members. I hope all of our current reps can be here and participate and make our new representatives feel welcome. And I will work with Nicole to schedule our orientation.
So yeah, if you have feedback or specific ideas, go ahead and send those forward. And certainly what we've done in the past with orientation is have it the same day as the first staff council meeting of the year. I think in the past we've done sort of the meat of the orientation in the morning and then had the business meeting in the afternoon, which scheduling-wise has meant that the meeting doesn't happen in this room because Faculty Senate is in here in the afternoon, that it happens just next door is where we've been able to do it in the past. But so that does mean it's a slightly longer commitment for people that one day, but I think it's worth it to get that information. And then I'd also encourage committee chairs to really work with Nate and to be kind of preparing information or presentations about your committee for new members to help them make their decision about which one to be involved in. I think that's one of the most valuable pieces. So we really like the committee chairs a lot to help with orientation. All right. And then a reminder that for those of you in Fairbanks, there's a holiday gathering tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. here in the Wood Center. And so please attend if you're able. There's usually good food. And the kids from the Bunnell House come and sing, which is adorable. It's just kind of a nice time to be festive as a group going into the holiday season. So please make sure people in your units know about that as well and have heard about it and know that they can come and attend and eat and listen to music. And sometimes there's a reindeer. Yeah. So.
There's a full featured detailed announcement in the house.
Yeah, there should be. All right. Man, we are just moving so fast today. I'm not in a hurry to leave, I promise. This is not intentional. I thought some of these things would take longer. Well, I guess, and then we didn't have Centennial. That was the guess. No, it's fine. Okay. Internal committee reports. Did you have anything to say, Brandy?
Yes, can you all hear me? I did not submit a report. Sorry about that. But we had a rocky but successful election, and it looks like everything is ratified. Everyone's on board, and the committee is already meeting, looking at options for next year because of all of the issues that happened this year. So hopefully we'll have a bit of a smoother process next year. But we're already working out details for that, and I may stay on with the elections committee after January for a few meetings, if they feel that it's necessary to help get some kinks worked out.
Great.
So that's all I have.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And have we identified a chair for when you leave?
We have not, but we're meeting tomorrow.
Okay, great. Awesome. So thank you again, Brandy, for all your service with that
committee.
You're welcome. And, if you're willing to continue working with them, I think everyone would think that was a wonderful thing. So, thank you. Matthew, membership and rules.
So we did have a brief meeting this last month. We did discuss that I am going to continue as chair. I wasn't reelected to staff council this last cycle, but I have been asked and accepted just to continue as chair for that group. And we just discussed our kind of unfinished business, mostly in relation to comparing our bylaws to the UA kind of bylaws that we operate under to make sure there's not any inconsistencies. We did decide that we wouldn't be able to dedicate any time until January, and that's mostly because it's just myself and Melissa that are active. Trish and Brad, of course, are leaving staff council, so we are definitely desperate for more members. It's a very easy committee to be on. We're mostly just, we very much take a large issue and compartmentalize it and take little pieces of it and spread it out between the members to review information. So is there anybody who's currently on staff council that wants to get a little more knowledge of kind of the underlying workings of staff council, then please just join us. We did schedule our monthly meetings to be the second Wednesday of each month at 3 p.m. via Google Hangout. So if you have a conflict but you're interested in our committee, we are flexible. So just let us know to see what we can do to get you involved. And the only other thing that we discussed was an observation from this last election cycle that is just an observation at this point, and it's the compensation of the units compared to the departments that are represented by them. There's kind of some situations that I guess historically has happened as well, where one unit will be represented by three or four people from the same department versus more of a diverse, actually, you know, trying to get people from other departments inside of their committees. So we don't know what we're going to do with that or not. We don't want to restrict people because we allow people participating in staff council, but we also want to make sure that everybody, there's a diverse representation within each unit. So if anybody has any great ideas about that, because it's kind of hard to think of a solution for that, or want to discuss that more, feel free to let us know, and we'll be happy to hear any ideas. And, of course, Trish said her goodbyes, and she'll be sorely missed. That's all.
Thank you, Matthew. And I'll just add to that plug for those of you who are new, you will have to choose one of the regular committees to serve on, which meet once a month. Membership in Rules is a really, really good way to sort of gain an understanding of how staff council functions, how we represent people, how we do business, essentially. So it's, I think, a really good place for new members as well to kind of get that ground-level understanding of staff council. So just a plug as well. And I know we have some current members who are still somewhat new through appointments and so forth. So that's also a place I would encourage, anyone to add. And I think long-term members, too, it's very helpful because you've had time to think about some of these issues, like Matthew said, about fair representation and so forth. So,
and I forgot to mention that we did have one kind of thought / interest in trying to set up some sort of membership kind of directory of a little bit of information about your representative that can be easily accessed by staff so people can get an idea of who the staff members are and a little information about them, as well as when we have an election, they can get an idea of who they are, because a lot of times if you don't recognize the name, that's as far as it goes. And we don't have an avenue for people to easily find information about our candidates.
Like candidate statements and so forth, that's a good idea. And I know Nicole maintains kind of a list of names and contact information online, but yeah, that's... Right. So now it's, yeah, we certainly have seen a big increase in interest in staff council in the last couple of years, which has been fantastic, but I think will maybe, yeah, lead to a lot of people looking at this and going, alphabetical? Yeah, I don't know these people. So that's a good point and a good issue to take up in the coming year. So thank you, Matthew. All right, with that, I'll turn it over to Chancellor Thomas for his remarks. So welcome, Chancellor.
Thank you. Is this on? Yeah. Good. So I'll start off with a fun one. I'll ask that you all plan to attend the holiday party, right? It's tomorrow afternoon, 4 to 6, so I look forward to seeing you all there. I know that we have the children's choir coming from the Bunnell House, so that's always fun. Next is... some of you may have heard the president at the leadership summit this last week. Did you announce that? Announced that he's going to search for a permanent UAF chancellor. I think that's good news. The intent is to fill that by next summer. So happy to see that. Last year's search committee had 17 individuals. 14 of those have agreed to serve again. And so that was a very diverse, good committee, I think. And so we have to find three replacements, including a chair. Paul Reichert won't be available to chair that. And so, you know, we're close on that. The idea is we would post an advertisement early in the new year and move from there. I'm expecting the president to release a news announcement on that this week is what I've been told. So you can watch for that. There'll perhaps be a little bit more detail on that one then. We have two other searches, just to make sure that you're aware of those. The Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, that was the University and Student Advancement, right? That was Mike Sprague's position. I met with those directors from the student affairs area in particular yesterday, asking their opinion as to what they thought. We've already had some faculty input. You may have seen the letter to the editor from Sina Anahita that went in saying this is an opportunity to reduce administration. And so I would be, you know, I would welcome feedback from this group on that front. I'm inclined to fill a vice chancellor for student affairs. Let me make that clear. Two principal reasons. One is there's the increasing emphasis on growing enrollment at the university, and having some leadership on that front would have value. And then the second is we would really like to have on the student side leadership that was emphasizing student safety, prevention education, especially related to alcohol and sexual assault. And so those are the two principal reasons why I think we need some leadership on that front. But again, I would welcome input. There are three other units. When I named Dr. Gray the interim, I set a number of units aside that would not report to him, KUAC, University Relations and Marketing, and Development and Alumni Relations. Those three units are reporting directly to me at this moment. And we could stick with that structure or reorganize that in some fashion as well. So if you have thoughts on that matter, I would welcome those. Again, we're going to be moving fairly quickly, so a response this week would have real value if you have thoughts on that. I would appreciate hearing from you. We also have the Director of Diversity and Equal Opportunity open. That search is underway. The search committee has been formed. Two of the three folks that have been assigned to do the initial screening have done so. When the third person finishes, we will contact folks for interviews, and we hope to finish that and make a hire here before the holiday break. So that's our intent. As soon as that one is hired, we have an additional investigator position open, and we will immediately fill that investigator position and restaff that unit. So that's our plan there. I wanted to speak a little bit about budget. So the board has passed a budget. It's $341 million is what they are submitting to the governor. Last year, remember, we got $325, and so it's an ask for an increase. That's particularly challenging given the fiscal climate of the state, but nonetheless, what the board has done. The other piece of information that we are waiting on is the governor's budget. That is usually out about December 15th, and at least historically, the end resulting budget is often very closely associated with the number released by the governor in December. And so, of course, we're very anxious to see that. My leadership team and I are meeting with deans and directors this Thursday to talk about a variety of budget strategy elements and seeking their input and thoughts on a variety of areas there. Ask them to do a little bit of homework on their own suggestions. And then once we have the governor's budget, probably in early January, we'll start our usual process, putting some things out on the table that have come largely from deans and directors and vice chancellors and seeking public input, including from this group. Okay? So that's our plan. Hard to get too far ahead of the curve before we see what the governor releases, as you might guess, and that will give us sort of two figures, right? One pursuing what we might do if we get the board budget, and what we might do if we get the governor's budget, which is typically somewhat different than the board proposes. So that's what we're waiting for on that front. And then strategic pathways. There is a special board meeting on December 14th. That will address the School of Education recommendation. I'll remind you that the president has recommended that there be one dean at one institution leading all of the education programs across the state, and his recommendation is that is UAF. There was certainly some pushback, and that motion was tabled at the last board meeting. So we're anxious to see how that plays out on the 14th. And then finally, Chancellor's Cornerstone Award. Please think about nominations. That's open until February 10th, just to remind you and encourage you to take part in that. And then, of course, the Staff Make Students Count Award, same sort of thing. You probably already mentioned that, but I wanted to make sure that I was supporting those. So with that, I'll take any questions that you might have.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy.
If we wanted to let our represented faculty know where they could send their suggestions for the Vice Chancellor of USA structure reporting, where would you like those sent to? Directly to you?
That would be fine.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't gotten a whole lot of comment other than the student affairs directors so far.
Okay.
So I'd welcome that.
All right. Okay. Thank you. That's all.
And so I understand if this is too soon to say, but do you plan to apply for the permanent chancellor position?
I don't. Thank you for asking. I'm taking that as a positive. I really believe, so I had two significant goals when I returned, right? One is UAF really does deserve a permanent long-term chancellor, all right? And I would really hope that we get somebody that will stay 5 or more years, is what I mean by that. Given my age, that would be a challenge for me to do personally. And I think it's what, I think UAF deserves that long-term, energetic person. And so I will say I have no intention of leaving UAF hanging. So if there's a problem with this search, I'll hang around, right? Unless I'm chased out, of course. It's early still. But that's my intent. So thank you. The second one was to do my best to get the single accreditation issue off the table, just so you heard that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions or comments for the Chancellor? How about online? Okay, thank you so much, Chancellor, for coming and speaking with us. And hopefully those of us here in Fairbanks will be able to see you tomorrow at the holiday gathering as well.
Good.
So I think just to clarify on Brandy's point, if you do have thoughts on the structure of the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs position or on the filling of that position, it is okay to send them to the Chancellor.
Yep. That'd be fine.
As well. So I think our representatives, especially our representatives who work in that area and who know it, should feel encouraged to do that as well.
If I can add one more thing. So you remember the revenue generating forum that I held in early November? We had 59 submissions online with that. About 40 of them, people actually put their names. Some avoided putting their names and email addresses because they were raising, let's say, controversial elements that they were afraid that they might take some heat over, which was had value to it as well. Let me make that clear. But I have written to each and every one of them that gave their name and email address and given them some feedback and which ones are likely to be pursued and which ones not so much. And why, some rationale for each. So I wanted to make sure that you understood that I found that very valuable, a valuable conversation, and we did generate some very good ideas that will be pursued on that front. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chancellor. All right. And I did see, online. Just for everyone else, if anyone else had the same question as Wendy, yes, what Matthew was speaking about before we went to the Chancellor's remarks was the Membership and Rules Committee. So it sounds like, Matthew, you've got a new representative there. Royal Affairs, Chris.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Rural Affairs. Last meeting was okay on Monday night. We were supposed to have a guest speaker, Linda Joel. She's the director of the Texas campus. She had a family emergency who wasn't able to attend. So we will be rescheduling her hopefully in February. This coming, well, let's see, Wednesday the 14th, we will have Jennifer Elkhart. She is the director of the Stewart Marine Center, and with the RV Sicily Act as well. So that's been a really entertaining, case. She's also furnished a handbook of the SMC and the RV Sicily Act, and so I hope to have that made available to everyone here in the staff council. Our next meeting will be in February. We will not be in January. We have, based on our last meeting about the manufacturer information, we actually have a couple of committee members that are looking into what it would take to provide distance education for that manufacturer event. So hopefully, the idea would be to make that service available to folks in the state. Other than that, we will be meeting again in 10 seconds on Wednesday in February. Ross, you're welcome. And you're more than welcome to serve with us or come to the meeting just to help the affairs operate.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Any questions? All right, staff affairs.
Our meeting, we discussed the resolution for furlough and non-exempt employees that we discussed earlier. That was the entirety of our meeting this month. Next month, we're meeting December 16th at 10 a.m. Rasmussen Library 502. And I can say now that I've been elected as VP, I know Jane will be looking for another co-chair. So if anyone's interested, please get a hold of either me or Jane.
Excellent. Thank you. I was about to ask that as a follow-up. So I'm glad. I'll say, co-chairs is something that we started doing new this year, but I think it's worked really well for those committees. You might be able to speak to it as someone who's been a co-chair, but...
Yeah, it worked really well for us. We both were very interested, but we have varying workloads. And as Jane has been very, very busy this last month, I've just sort of taken charge of things and then, just have traded back and forth. So if you're not sure and you kind of feel like you want to dip your toe into chairing a committee, it would be a really great opportunity.
Thank you. And I will say, if that isn't filled before the February meeting, it is possible as a brand new representative at your first meeting to sign up and be a chair of a committee. I think actually that's what I did my first meeting, and it was a very valuable experience, especially if there's an opportunity where there's a co-chair, someone who can sort of work with you to transition into that role, which I was lucky to have at the time. But there's no reason to be shy. No one will be like, who's this new kid on the block? You're totally welcome to do that if you've got the interest and the enthusiasm. So if you're looking to really dive in right away, co-chair is a great opportunity. And university advocacy.
Not sure if Jamie's still online and will have anything to add, but
she did just do a little
excellent. And let's see what she says. Well, she covered everything. That's it.
So, yeah, it sounds like also what some of the stuff you covered earlier, Kara, about the volunteer day and then also the online forums idea or the work groups idea, which I think is, especially interesting, those work groups or discussion boards as a way to provide that mentoring opportunity or that support for people regardless of where they work at the university, and particularly our rural employees as well, who I think often end up feeling a little isolated. So, I think that's a really interesting and positive idea, and I'll be watching eagerly from the sidelines to see where that goes. Thank you, guys. Okay, let's see. We have a couple more minutes, actually. Did the Staff Health Care Committee have anything to add to the written report?
No, if anybody's interested in seeing what the JCC reports are, they're posted online, feel free to contact me and I will be more than happy to share it.
Great. So just to say that again in the room, because it was a little fuzzy, if anyone is interested in seeing the reports from the Joint Health Care Committee, which is the sort of the higher level one, they're posted online, and Leslie will be glad to provide the link to them to anyone who's interested. So thanks, Leslie.
I have a question for Leslie. In the meeting report, the employee assistance program is up for renewal. Are they planning to renew that?
The employee
okay, thank you.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. What was the answer?
Yeah.
It will be renewed. Okay, that's very good to hear. I think again, as we talked about, especially with the need to support people during some of these real hard times. So that's some good news. All right. And then Compensation Working Group, those of you who volunteered last time, thank you. Your names are going to System Governance, so you should start being contacted about those meetings. Like they have started meeting somewhat regularly now. So I've just told Morgan as well. So don't email this to me anymore, so she'll be in touch, I think. All right, anything from any of the external committees that needed to be added? Yeah. Sorry, what's that? Oh, no, they haven't really been doing anything active as a committee so far.
Leslie, I think at least initially this year, as that committee gets going, their focus is going to be on coordinating a report for the regents and the president, focused on the results of various surveys, employee engagement and morale surveys that have been conducted at the different university, different components of the university system. So as you know, last year UAF conducted an employee engagement survey. UAA conducted a similar, at their staff council level, they conducted a similar survey, taking the temperature of staff morale, et cetera. And statewide and UAS are following suit. And so I believe statewide has actually completed theirs, and I think UAS anticipates completion of theirs this year, before the end of the year. So once those results are all available, attempting to coordinate them and highlight significant portions in common or that are different in some kind of report for the regents, I think, is a priority for the morale committee.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah,
it hasn't really been meeting as a committee, Leslie. It's basically the person on Staff Alliance who is technically the chair of that committee has basically said, we'll post these reports.
Yeah.
I think they haven't actually had a committee meeting at all. So it's not actively meeting as a committee, I'll say. Sorry, what? Yeah, I think right now they're just going with the surveys that have been just putting in one place the UAF employee engagement survey and then the surveys that were done at the other universities. So that's all that is happening on that effort right now. So moving on to announcements before we go off the record, I just realized I had a couple that I didn't say during my report earlier. One is during pre-staff, Nate and I did discuss with the Chancellor and Kari about a communication, a reminder about winter weather. We very, very rarely close the campus because we're a residential campus, but the guidance is typically use your judgment about coming in. We did have, a new policy that ended up coming out of staff council a while back that if there is an actual closure because of weather, then there's like an emergency leave that people can use. But that only applies if the chancellor or president announces a full closure, which is very rare. So it's best to be proactive. Speak to your supervisor about, your options also for working from home if you have a weather emergency. I know at one point I lived on the top of a 3-mile hill, so while people in town could get to work very easily, there were a few days where there was just no way I could leave my house safely. And on those days, having already discussed with my supervisor in advance what I could do for work from home that day, meant that I didn't have to use so much leave for myself, which was good. And so I think just a reminder to have those conversations. If you are a supervisor, have those conversations with your employees. If you're not, maybe raise that as a discussion. Especially a reminder that we do have required trainings to complete. If you haven't completed your required trainings and you have power at your house during one of those days, taking those trainings online might be an option as well. So there should be a communication coming out about that. It's just a reminder to people to stay safe, prioritize your safety when that concern happens. Pending Board of Regents approval, there will be a project to replace the roof of the Wood Center this summer. It's had leaks for years along the skylight here, right above us. And also the copper roof, while iconic, has an insulation value of R5, which is not great in a climate like ours. So there's sort of a three-part project to replace the roof, depending on how much of it gets approved and how much they're able to do. The main priority is this sloping copper roof part. The goal would be to remove the skylight altogether, leave the clerestory windows that run along the side, possibly add a south-facing window for more light, and then the roof would be replaced with one that has an R value of, I think, R50. So it's a dramatic increase in insulation. And then it would be basically copper colored on top, but not actually raw copper as it is now. And we will be able to sell that copper. So that's a nice benefit. And then they're also looking at replacing this walking deck. The cement roof that comes off the upper level here also has a leak around the skylight that goes down into the seating area downstairs. So that's a project that they're looking at, basically to make the building more sustainable and also not have leaks in it. So I guess the roof, other than patching leaks, there hasn't really been anything, any big effort on it pretty much since it was built in the 70s, so it's long overdue. So just a heads up, that'll probably be a big project in the summer. It's likely it won't be fully finished until early in the fall semester. And while they're doing the main roof replacement, there will probably be a crane in between the Wood Center and the Wickersham dorms right there. So they'll still ensure access to the building through all routes, and the docking bay will be open, the loading bay, but just a heads up that that's another kind of big project on core campus to be aware of. And then one other announcement, Nicole will be out of the office between December 31st and January 14th, and then again between late January and mid-February. And so committee chairs, anyone who needs anything from Nicole, just plan proactively around that, and and then before that for the holidays as well, during the hard closure. So if you think you'll need something from Nicole, if you know in advance that you'll need something from Nicole between now and February, it would be better to contact her before the holiday break, particularly with enough time for her to respond. So not December 23rd. All right, so those were all my ethics ones. Okay, great.
It is at 11 o'clock.
Okay. So the Staff Make Student Count nominations is now open, and it will be open until January 20th, which is a pretty short turnaround for this type of application. So I'd say anyone who might possibly be nominating someone, I would get to work this week, especially contacting students about the letters of support that are needed. Because with that holiday break in there, that will be a tight turnaround for that type of nomination packet. All right. So, sorry, those were a lot of announcements. Any other announcements that people would like on the record before we end the recording?
Not an announcement, but I guess a question on the record. Is the calendar officially canceled for next year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. That...
the staff council calendar, the printed calendar.
Yeah. We won't be doing one this year. Part of our budget reductions, one, is that there would be no budget to print it. Another part of the budget reductions to staff council is that Nicole has been working on a reduced contract and has somehow managed to continue doing pretty much everything for us. But this is something that is just going to need to come off her schedule. We just can't put the time behind it this year. So no staff council calendar this year. That's a good question, Brad, because this is typically the time where we start getting questions.
I would also just like to say on the record that I know that her response is typically, well, this is my job, but really disproportionate amount of work by Nicole this year. And so thanks, Nicole. Lots of challenges, and she definitely approached them with vigor and nobility. And so I appreciate Nicole.
Okay. Any other announcements on the record? All right. So if we can end the recording.